Yes, yes, yes. We are almost halfway through the week. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. Simone behind the glass today. Always nice to see Simone. And we have a special edition of the King's Roundtable. That will be at 10:30. So you don't have to wait all the way until 12:30 as you normally do. We are rocking and rolling at 10:30 with Brendan Nunes as Frankie Cardicelli is too cool for school this week. But we'll leave Frankie be. Brendan Nunes will be in the place to be at 10:30. Chris Watkins, how you doing?
Hey, great. Feeling good.
Living better.
Yeah, shout out our guy Frankie Cardicelli who's a man of multiple fandoms, multiple
allegiances.
He went to the Sharks Rangers game yesterday as a Ranger fan. You know, as we've talked about tons of times, Frankie is a New York Yankee fan. He said he likes to pick up a new fandom every single year, and last year he got really into hockey and the New York Rangers. And yesterday, I was telling you in the pre-show, poor Frankie, our guy, as we know, his family, he bought his family tickets to that Charlotte Hornets game in which the Kings completely blew. And now Frankie's adding to the list of, the Rangers were up 2-0 at the end of two periods and then blew it in overtime to probably the worst team in the NHL. I say probably because I don't watch hockey. But
well, they're last in the Western Conference.
That's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, they're last in the Western Conference. And yeah, that is really unfortunate.
Poor guy.
The Sharks have 13 wins, and they got one of them on Frankie's watch.
Ah, that's how it goes.
You know, it's really the station as a whole doesn't have a great track record here. You did get a W, but you got a W in probably the worst game of this NFL season. That's the game that you went to, or the most boring game.
Oh, you're talking about me in general. I thought you meant as a station like the Niners
or the
Kings.
No, I'm saying, so Frankie goes.
No, we got problems.
The team that he wants to win catches an L to one of the worst teams in the NHL, the worst teams in the Western Conference. You go to Vegas to see your beloved Vikings, one of the worst games of the season. But you did get a W.
Sure.
Right? Sure. So, but at what cost?
I caught a body on Christmas.
That's right.
You went to
the Ravens
Watch
game.
Get absolutely
stay home.
Oh
my just God. Stay home.
Maybe Christopher Lodge should go to a Man City game or two.
Well,
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
He's getting on the mic.
They're 3-1 with me in attendance.
That's right.
4-1.
That's right. And you know what? Niners go to the Super Bowl. Your boys are going to Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know what. I don't know if the Niner fans listening, if you want us to go, if you don't. Well, too bad.
Too bad. Too bad.
Too bad. Well, it doesn't count if you go as media, though. It only counts if you go as a fan.
Right.
So
you
should
be
safe.
Our money, right.
You should be safe. Don't worry about it. We have Kings as we get ready for their road trip. Doc Rivers to the Bucks, who saw that coming?
Probably Doc.
Doc and the Bucks did. That's who. And the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, or as some others call it, the Hall of People That Were Nice to Reporters.
And yeah, pretty much, right.
And you know, you have guys entering in. You know, I love my baseball guys getting into the Hall of Fame. No shade on them. Adrian Beltre, love Adrian Beltre. Okay, he's been hilarious. If he was around for a longer period of time, he was already memed a lot. He hated when people touched his head.
Oh, that's
that was
right.
His thing. He really hated it. So shout out Adrian Beltre.
Like, really hated it.
Like, he really,
like,
really hated
on
it.
Sight,
yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah, he was not having a good time anytime that would happen, and Albert Pujols or whoever it is, with Miguel Cabrera would obviously play that up and mess with him. Todd Helton, okay, one of the best Rockies out there. And Todd Helton, he's a guy who, hey, is it because of where they play, the altitude, things like that? I think Todd Helton's always been a stud. I think he's a really good player. Joe Mauer, who Chris and I were looking at Joe Mauer. I don't know what it is, but if I asked the audience how long did Joe Mauer play in the Major League Baseball League, how long would you say? I don't think you would say 15 years.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like 15 years. I know towards the end, 2016, 17, 18, it was more of the DH situation. Basically, he started the DH thing, you know, pretty, not early in his career, but not too late. But Joe Mauer gets in, And we were comparing his stats to Buster Posey. Obviously, Buster's got the hardware in terms of the championships, and Joe Mauer does not. But Joe Mauer has a better WAR, 55.2 WAR, than Buster Posey. He really, all of his stats are better, right? He's got obviously more plate appearances. He had actually Buster had more home runs than Joe Mauer. Joe Mauer had 143, and Buster had 158. So, you know, I'm just looking here. Joe Mauer, RBIs, 923. You have Buster, RBI, 729. But he first ballot. So, to me, a little bit better versus Buster Posey with the three rings. You got to think that Buster gets in.
Right.
They are so similar. Yeah. They were both. Joe Mauer was a six-time All-Star. Buster Posey was a seven-time All-Star. Obviously, Buster's got the World Series. Joe Mauer, a five-time Silver Slugger. Buster Posey, a five-time Silver Slugger. Buster Posey, one Golden Glove. Joe Mauer, three Golden Gloves. I don't know how Buster only has one. Joe Mauer, three batting titles, okay? And Buster has one batting title, and they both have one MVP. So to me, you add what Buster has, similar to Joe Mauer, on top of the fact that Buster has those World Series, three-time World Series. He was also a Rookie of the Year for whatever that matters. Buster's got to be first ballot.
Oh, 100%.
I would think so.
It's no question. To me, the hardware is the thing that, I mean, it's easy. I mean, for him to be, I mean, if you look at the through line of those championships as well, I mean, it's Buster at the head of it all. So I there's no question. I mean, I didn't think there really was any question, but I mean, Joe Mauer getting in pretty much, I mean, to me,
it's the first ballot thing. Yeah, it's the first ballot thing for me, and I think a lot of people wondered.
Absolutely.
Some people wonder, you know, would Buster get in? I had somebody respond to me and say, well, his stats compared to other stats.
Sure, but
we know it's not. Look, if there's one thing Major League Baseball doesn't stay true to, it's a formula.
Yeah.
There's no formula, right?
No, especially not for the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. No, so for Buster Posey and what he did for that Giants franchise, being part of that battery, not just be, he wasn't a left fielder with three rings and oh, are those stats gonna, he's the catcher. He is the captain of that defense for all those years. He's caught some of the best pitchers in the history of the game.
Perfect games.
The perfect games, the Bumgarner, Game seven. So Buster Posey was a part of all of that. I think he gets in first ballot, but we shall
Random
see.
Random question. Mm-hmm. I might as well ask since we're talking about it. Who knows when we'll talk about Game 7 again. Where were you for that Game 7?
Yeah.
I will never forget.
I was at one of my local spots. This was when I was still in the Tech. So I was in the financial district of San Francisco, got off of work, was watching, and I'm thinking, this is crazy. This is insane.
So where did you actually watch the game happen?
It was a restaurant that is no longer
really.
That is
and
no
it was just I mean, I assume
it was popping.
Like everywhere had to be popping, especially that
day. It was a Burmese restaurant that like everybody would go to
was
to go
the bar,
and,
probably?
And grab, and, you know, grab some refreshments. Yeah. And it's gone now, but the memories will never go.
Oh man, yeah, I will never forget. There was a king. I think it might have been opening night, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like that timeline works out. It might have been opening night for the Kings, or it was a really. I know it was in the throes of the relocation saga too, so it might have been like a hey, we're officially staying kind of thing or something. I remember there was a really big game at. I mean, this is probably Sleep Train Arena or might have been Power Balance Pavilion at the time, and it was just so crazy to see. They showed the scoreboard, I remember, the final score up on the Kings scoreboard, and the entire crowd went crazy. And it was just so weird to experience. At the time, they had the club level up on top of the second deck, and you could just hear people cheering. And it was just weird to see like a some people cheering for a game that wasn't in the arena that they were, I think when they actually won, like when the final pitch was made, it was during a free throw and like the entire, I mean,
I see
the entire crowd. It was like 10,000 people maybe at that time, just going nuts. And it was incredible. And it was a moment I will never forget. People high-fiving in the stands. I think I saw a couple people crying in the stands as well. It was nuts.
Nuts. Yeah. I mean, he's going out there and you're thinking, all right,
and I hate innings, one inning maybe even.
And I hate to be I hate to be the get off my lawn guy, but this is the type of stuff you don't see anymore, right?
Right.
We just had that with Snell a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And what was that, the COVID year?
Yeah.
And he gets pulled
and the Rays lose. Yeah.
So that is the baseball that we all know and love.
Now, even them going against that Royals team, right? Like
right.
A team like that Royals team doesn't exist.
Not really.
Either.
Not really. And that was when they had the 7-8-9, the punch of all those. All those pitchers,
Lorenzo
all those relief
Cain
pitchers.
Going crazy.
Lorenzo Cain was my dude.
Yeah, that's got to be like, that's the Allen Stiles mold. You were like, that. If I'm going to
well,
make
first
MLB,
of all,
it's
yeah,
going to be that.
Well, first of all, no, because the thing about Lorenzo Cain.
He was really fast.
He was like a smooth, what was he, 6'3 or something
like that.
So when you have these taller center fielders,
right?
When they say, oh, wow. One thing that no one ever said about me because of my choppy running, it's like I always wanted to hear, man, that guy glides in the outfield.
He's like a gazelle
out there. I never heard that. Well, I heard, he can make the play. Yeah. He can make the play. He could make it look easier.
Flintstones run out
there. But he can make the play. I'm yabba dabba doing out there just trying to make a play. But, yeah, shout out to. And then how about this? The Kansas City Royals, they lose. And they actually, we talk about the revenge year and how it didn't work out for the Eagles and how it's really tough to come back.
Right.
The Kansas City Royals actually did it.
That's true.
They lost and came right back and said, we're running this back and we're going to get what's ours as long as Bumgarner isn't over there. And it was an odd year.
Yeah.
So Bumgarner was not there. So, yeah, hopefully Buster gets in. Some of the best memories if you are a Giants fan or if you are a baseball fan. As we, you know, kind of celebrate the guys that did get in. I know a lot of people are low on the Hall of Fame, especially out here if you are a Giants fan and Barry Bonds and all that. You know, it's still wild to me that they have, is it a Barry Bonds helmet? Or they have Barry Bonds equipment in Cooperstown.
Yeah, yeah. Very strange.
I don't get that.
Yeah. It's either got to be all or nothing.
I don't understand
that. Yeah.
At all.
Is it from his hit to from the record-breaking hit?
But I don't get that.
That makes no sense.
So hopefully one of the Giants can get in.
Yeah.
Hopefully Buster Posey can get in. But yeah, Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, Joe Mauer, Jim Leland. Jim Leland, by the way, you know, he coached. Was he the manager of the Tigers when the Giants beat them?
Yeah.
That feels right.
That sounds right.
Shout out to Jim Leland for getting in. As well, we will see what happens when Buster is able to put his name in the hat. Got to get to a break. When we get back, we have a lot of Kings to talk about. Also, Niner fans, I got to go back and forth. I had a back and forth with a Niner fan. And honestly, I understand why you're upset about some of the Brock Purdy stuff. But I honestly just want to know, what is it that you want? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Brandon Nunes joins us at 10:30 in 15 minutes for a special early edition of Kings Roundtable. That will be a great time as the Kings get ready. And Chris, yeah, I haven't looked. I do know this is their longest road trip of the season, correct?
Yes. Seven game road trip is like, that's like some David Stern
era
road trip.
Like
that's
we said,
crazy.
There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, Dave was getting on Jason Ross and our beard. You could shave when they leave and come back and have a beard. That's how long they're going to be gone.
Full
beard, Ross beard.
We're not going to be here when they come back.
That's right.
Probably. I mean, I guess knock on wood.
That's right. I'm going to be clout chasing in Vegas. We're going to get the best guests, okay? If the Niners get to Vegas, this show is going to another level.
Uh-oh.
You are not. I'm telling you right now, Chris, don't let me get to Vegas, man.
Okay.
I am shameless out there. I am shameless. Anybody on Radio Row, the guests are going to be out of control.
Oh, yeah.
Brock, please.
Yeah.
Please, I need to get to Vegas.
Yeah. Alan's going to ask every single guest, so what's your take on Brock Purdy?
Yeah. Huh? What's your take?
Yeah. What are you doing for the Brock Purdy movement? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? What are you doing?
Steve Young.
How are you?
Whoever I see.
Yeah.
All right. It's going down.
That's
and
crazy.
I'm not doing it for me.
I'm not doing it for my own game. No, Alan would never.
I'm doing it for the station.
Yeah.
I'm doing it for the loyal listeners.
Sure.
Of Sacktown Sports.
Right.
I'm doing it for the Sack Chat.
Right.
I'm doing it for the Sacktowners.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it for everybody.
No.
I'm doing it for Simone.
That's what
I'm doing it for Christopher Lott. I'm doing it for everybody.
How about me?
You're going to be with me. You're going to be with me.
Okay.
We're doing it together.
Okay.
You got to make sure you got your questions ready.
I know. That's what I'm most concerned about by far is that we're going to get somebody
up here.
I'm
doing it for you. I'm doing it for St. Robert basketball.
Shout out St. Robert.
It's going down.
Yeah.
Please take care of business this weekend, Niners. Please. I beg of you.
Yeah.
All right. Kings, Kings are back on track now that they have beaten the Hawks. And albeit shorthanded, albeit in a – who is the team, right? Are the Hawks – if you look at the different teams that are dealing with the most, not drama, but trade situations, right? It's got to be the Hawks right now, right?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, they have like, I mean, Trae Young, like you said yesterday, Trae Young got put into some, hey, Trae Young and Zach LaVine are the two best fits for the Lakers talk. Mm-hmm. You got DeJounte Murray, who, yeah, we talked about this morning on the crosstalk. Sadiq Bey, I've seen put in there. Jason Ross put in there. DeAndre Hunter's a name that's been thrown out there. Mm. Clint Capella's a name. Pretty much their entire starting rotation is out there. And I don't even think they have, oh, Jalen Johnson. That's right. I was like, I don't even think they have an untouchable.
He had, he was the untouchable. Really just because he's the youngest?
He's the youngest. That's literally it.
Yeah.
I mean, in the same way Keegan is untouchable, Jalen Johnson, I'm sure, is the same kind of untouchable where it's like, you know, we definitely don't want to move on from him. But, you know, if you're going to tell us, give us Giannis Antetokounmpo for Jalen Johnson, well, I'm going to pack Jalen Johnson's bags.
Yeah.
You know? So it's got to be Atlanta. And I don't know. Maybe Chicago's a close second. Washington, I guess.
Chicago's gotten quiet.
Yeah. But I mean, and it's because those teams are like in the play-in at least to where maybe they can convince
not
themselves.
Not the Wizards.
That's the thing is like, I think the Wizards should be the team that probably has the most guys on the block. But even then, they're no different than most teams.
I saw one thing, and it's just so hard to keep up with everything that's going on. But I did see that there was only, Bilal Coulibaly.
Right.
This is from Evan Sittery. The only untouchable player on the Wizards roster per Shams.
There you go.
Okay, a potential fire sale incoming from Washington. That was January 22nd. That was 2 days ago. Yeah. So they have one untouchable. So
their rookie. He's their rookie.
Yes, like, I mean, exactly. So we just don't know. And honestly, they probably get the least, you know, people don't know. You're not going to get that much value for somebody.
I mean, he's on a rookie contract, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless they're just super balling right now. So you look at the Wizards, and again, the problem isn't the sales. The problem isn't the quantity of sales and availability of players. The problem is the price tags on said players. I can only imagine, who's a better player to you? Kyle Kuzma or DeJounte Murray?
DeJounte.
Okay. But you know for... Okay, better question. Who's a better question? Don't laugh back there, Simone. I see you laughing. Fine. You have Kyle Kuzma or Dorian Finney-Smith?
Kyle Kuzma.
Okay.
Sure.
If they want... What did they want? They wanted a starter-level player and a first-rounder for Dorian Finney?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I guess the point I'm getting at is, are they looking... The Wizards, if you're doing a full fire sale... You need assets, right? So the same way that Oklahoma City did it with Paul George, you're probably going to want two firsts for Kyle Kuzma. And any way you go, you're either going to pay a lot of money like for Jeremy Grant or you're going to give up first rounders. That's where we're at right now.
Definitely, yeah. And I kind of think that's why you're not seeing any moves done. I think it's why you hear a ton of rumors about things happening or about people talking, but not a lot of like, hey, they're progressing in talks because the Kings – shouldn't, I mean, if you're going to, again, this is the Kings really one move. They don't have a ton of extra assets to give up. And so if you're going to trade for Kyle Kuzma and get rid of those second round picks, you got to make sure Kyle Kuzma or Jeremy Grant or Andrew, whoever it is, you got to make sure that's the right guy because there's no pivot off of that. If next year you say, Kyle Kuzma just didn't work out for us, we got to try and ship him off for something else. Well, now you can't attach two first-round picks for Kyle Kuzma because you sent him out to get Kyle Kuzma. And so it's just a really tough balancing act, and it's kind of the position the Kings are uniquely in because a lot of teams, like you said, they have OKC not only has guys like Cason Wallace they can throw into trades, the other Jalen Williams they can throw into actual young player assets, Trey Mann. They have a war chest of picks on top of that. The Kings only have the picks, and so they're just really limited in the moves they can make. And, you know, I think it's just everybody's asking for draft picks, and the Kings have to be really selective about who they give those draft picks to.
Get into a break when we get back, as promised, Kings Roundtable Early Edition. Get your coffee. okay? Get your scone and get ready for King's Roundtable with Brendan Nunes. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. We are joined by Brendan Nunes, Sacktown Sports Kings Insiders. So it is our Kings Triangle today, but hopefully we can actually get some work done today with Frankie Cardicelli out.
Right.
Watching his Rangers hold that L. I'm sorry, Frankie. I'm sure you're listening. And I'm sorry. Brendan Nunes, look, man, another day, another nothing burger from the Kings in terms of making a move, but you did see the Bucks make a move, getting rid of their head coach and getting Doc Rivers. Your thoughts on, you know, there are a lot of comparisons to David Blatt, right? And David Blatt was in first place, but something just didn't look right. You bring in Ty Lue, and one thing I saw Mad Dog kind of discuss on First Take this morning is a lot of people don't really talk about the fact that David Blatt lost in the finals without Kyle. It's always this conversation of how much is a coach needed, right? When you see Coach Mike Brown say, these guys got to take care of business. I'm telling them what to do. And for David Blatt to go to the finals, lose, you don't have Kyrie, you don't have Kevin Love. Next season, you're in first place, and they just say, yeah, it's not working. Is this really about X's and O's, or is it just Giannis being Giannis LeBron Antetokounmpo, and I just don't like this coach?
Yeah, I mean, I'd guess that it's more of the latter, and I don't know Giannis specifically or how much it has to do with Dame, but mm-hmm. I'd imagine it has to do with more so kind of losing the locker room or those guys not wanting you to kind of be the lead decision maker when it comes to all the basketball-related things that are going on there. And I'm kind of torn between saying, hey, props for recognizing it early and not trying to just like force the issue if you realize it's not happening, or do you need to write it out and give it a little bit of a chance? And I think it's a very fine line and hard to know without knowing the inner workings of the locker room and how they were really responding to him. But it's definitely a weird situation, because while the Bucks are underperforming, I think, relative to their expectations, they've started to figure out a little bit more. And, you know, it's not a perfect roster, even though it's got some stars at the top, obviously. So it's definitely a weird situation. And I guess I kind of just assume that there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and that the stars specifically, but also probably the latter guys, just kind of he kind of lost the locker room. It seems to be the reporting. And I think when that's the case, it's pretty hard to recover from that.
Isn't that an interesting lesson, though? I mean, I don't know if you can call it a lesson, but just, I mean, it made me think specifically about, I mean, it could be the Kings specifically, or really any team. Just because you have a winning record or things might look like they're going better, or you can say, oh, like, what are you talking about? We're the second seed in the Eastern Conference right now. What, they're 30-13 or whatever? What are you talking about? Nothing needs to be done. I mean, it's a sign that, you know, you should, A, never be satisfied, and if you feel like something's wrong, act on it. You know, don't just sit there, and if you feel like it could get worse by just sitting there. I mean, yeah, I mean, to turn this into a question about the Kings, like, is there a bit of a parallel here when you see the Bucks again, having a good record, and the Kings have talked a lot about, hey, we have the same record as we did at this point last year, but it hasn't felt the same. And so would you say that there's a parallel between that and the Kings situation where, yes, just because they have a good record or the same record as they had last year doesn't mean that this is a good situation or a situation that we should just try and ride out?
Yeah, there's definitely parallels, like, just to the extent of you never know fully what's going on behind the scenes or what internal expectations really are.
Sure.
When it comes to a
right.
team. And I think that the Kings hope to be better than they were last year. And I think that the response of, hey, we're at the same point we were last year, in my eyes, sounds more like a response to the fan base and maybe some of the media questions that they're getting about, you know, underperforming and things like that. It seems like more of a response, because obviously they wanted to be better than last year. And I think there's a outsider perspective of, well, you're pretty much the same roster, you're probably going to be about the same. But internally, of course, these guys think they're going to be better. And I think that's totally understandable. And with the Bucks parallel, like, maybe they thought that they would be better at this certain point. I think back to the Terry Stotts situation a lot, kind of when that happened.
Crazy.
And, you know, how does this factor in at all? Or you never know when it's really started. And this was sort of the final straw, sort of. I'd imagine that this wasn't just a impulsive one thing happened, okay, you're out of here. And obviously sometimes that does take place. But, yeah, you definitely never fully know what's going on behind the scenes and what each person's internal expectations are, not just for themselves as a player or a coach or front office, but as a team in general.
Yeah, and the other part of that is basically – what I've heard is after they lost to, because what are they, 0-4 against the Pacers? Happened when they got blown out in the in-season tournament against the Pacers. And that's when he tried to hold people accountable. They just weren't feeling it. And that's when things started to go left. I think, Chris, you make a great point. You always need to be striving. And we sit here and we say, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse.
Right.
And it's true, right? And if you're the Bucks, second place might feel good to them. We know we've seen the Celtics lose finals. Don't get me wrong. But the Bucks are probably thinking, yeah, I'm not really trying to go to Boston for the Eastern Conference Finals. I want that one seed.
Right.
And if we don't think that our current head coach can help get us that one seed, we got to get him out of here,
or
right?
Or forget the one seed. Like, just in general, I don't feel like this coach can help us beat the Celtics, period. Like, it doesn't matter if we're at home, on the road, like – it's, a sign of, if you don't think that you can win a playoff series or win the playoff series you want to be winning, why not make the – why wait? Why be like, oh, I'm not sure? If you are definitive or if you feel like things aren't trending in that direction, cut it out. Just cut it out now.
Well, and to that point, there's just really no time to waste. That's what we're talking about here. So – and we've had conversations about as far as the Kings and – hey, let's just see what happens. When you see a team like the Bucks, who I guess are further down their window, when you go and get a mid-30s Damian Lillard, they are further down their window, and they have a better chance of winning the whole thing than the Kings. But it does go to show that these teams are not just waiting. Something is about to happen. I mean, Terry Rozier goes to the Miami Heat. We'll discuss DeJounte Murray and that price tag as we have you for the next hour. But does it make you feel any differently as far as the Kings and their perceived timeline, or is it still, let's see what happens this season, right? The price, I mean, the market is absurd right now.
Right.
Everybody's, if I was on an NBA team right now, if somehow I finessed my way, I'd be worth the first round pick. That's what's going on right now. If you want to get Thanasis, that's a first round pick. Okay, anybody want a Thanasis at the Antetokounmpo? That's a first round pick. Do you feel any differently now, or is it just the market is just still a little bit too hot?
No, I mean, I don't feel too differently. Like, they're in a different timeline than the Bucks, for sure. That's a totally different timeline. And I'll say what I said before. I don't think the Kings need to feel pressured or rushed, really. Like, everybody is locked up for 3+ years. Your entire starting five, you have at least this year and two more. Trey Lyles, you have one more season after this one. Malik Monk's the only guy in your top seven that you don't have locked up long term, and I think they could offer him close to $19 million annually. That's something that you have to figure out in the offseason no matter, but I don't think you need to rush. And if the market is just messed up kind of in the way that you're saying, and I definitely understand why you're saying that, then, you know, maybe there's not the right reason to go and pull the trigger, I guess. And they're definitely going to be looking. We know that this front office is aggressive and searching for ways to get better. But if they don't make a move, like, I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. And I would trust that that wasn't for a lack of trying. It's just they didn't see the right move. I keep going back to Buddy and Bagley were on this team for two seasons before, and the entire time, everybody knew these guys are going to get traded eventually. And it was always like, it's going to happen at this deadline. And it didn't. And then it's going to be like, oh, well, it's for sure going to be this offseason. And it felt like there were like three or four of those periods before it finally happened. And so many rumors about where they could potentially go and who the Kings could get. And they were patient waiting for the right guy. And it's different now when you are a more relative team than back then when the Kings were really at the bottom of the barrel. And I guess then you're allowed a little bit more patience to an extent. But I think that they have proven that they are willing to do that. And if you don't see the right move, then I think that's the way to go. No move is better than the wrong move.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we haven't talked to you either since HB had his happening, his 32 points the other night. In general, what have you thought about HB's season so far? And I mean, if he is going to stick around here. I mean, what do you hope to see in this second 41-game stint from him? Hopefully not just one 30-point performance, but what are you hoping if he is going to stick around? And he's one of those guys. You talk about Marvin and Buddy being in trades.
Same thing.
Same thing with HB, if not even longer. Yeah, I mean, if he's going to stick around, how do they try and make this thing work better than it has at least so far this season?
Yeah, it's funny. There's a 33-point game at the beginning of the year. There's a 20-point game, 20-something, light 20s, in the middle of it. And then we just got that 32-piece. And in between, there's no other 20-point game, even 20-plus. And I think I looked at it last year. He had, I forget the exact number, but it's in the teens. Like, he definitely was putting up 20-point games, at least here and there. And I do think that this is part of just the arc of a player's career. He's on the downswing a little bit. There's going to be some regression. We've seen it be a slow progress the last handful of years. But this was a pretty steep fall off from last year. And it doesn't seem to be like just skill set in my eyes. Like, defensively, yes, we've seen him take a step back. But I think the level of aggression offensively hasn't really been there this season to the extent it was last year. I felt like there were often times last year where it's like, oh gosh, the Kings are in a rut right now offensively. They can't really get a bucket. HB would find a way to get to the free throw line. He'd have a random quarter where he gets to the line two times, and it's a big just controlling the momentum. And I don't feel like you're really seeing that. And I thought it was interesting post-game, Domantas Sabonis is talking about, I think HB has a mismatch most nights, and we should probably try to get him a little bit more involved.
We saw it in that Pacers game, right? I mean, the one possession that I think the only points he got all game was on a TJ McConnell post-up, right?
Yeah. They definitely have throughout the course of the year. I think back to, like, Washington, they kept going in teams that are switching. It's like, all right, well, let's post up HB on Jordan Poole if we can get that matchup, obviously. So, I don't know. It's interesting because then Mike Brown is also saying, like, it kind of has to happen naturally because if I'm over there calling plays every single time, that takes us out of playing fast, which is one of their main identities, play fast, together, and physical. And you take them out of that playing fast by just drawing up plays and trying to make it a half-court game every single time, that it's kind of a tough spot. So it's almost like he naturally needs to get involved a little bit more. And I think the players could maybe be more conscious of that, but you also don't want to be thinking like, gosh, like, we just have to make sure to get this guy going tonight. They're trying to make the right play, and I think it really shouldn't matter who it goes to. But it feels like it should be HB's number just a little bit more, at least, than it has been.
Yeah, Chris was looking
real
at
quick,
the touches.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at the points. Brendan mentioned the amount of times HB dropped 20 last year. It was in 20 games. He scored 20 points in 20 games last year. This year, it's only been three times.
Wow. Wow.
Still got a whole nother half of the
season. Yeah,
right. Something maybe, tells me he's not going to have 17 more the rest
maybe
of this
year. Awakens something in the team. Hey, this is that X factor. You know, he's not going to shoot like that every night, but we have to add more versatility.
I just want one quarter. That's what I felt like
one
we used to get
game.
Is that there's a quarter a game
usually
where HB
first, right?
has, yeah, something like that. It'd be like first, second, right? It often was a first, I feel like, where he just has like 9 points in a quarter. You know, I just want one quarter where it's like, okay, that was HB's quarter.
Yeah. All right. Got to get to a break. When we get back, yeah, we're going to talk about it. There are some rumors swirling around, and it looked like a portion of Kings Nation was a little bit worried about De'Aaron Fox. We will discuss what we can when we get back. Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports. There are some conversations being had, some rumors swirling around. By the way, to Scooter 916, shout out to Sack Chat. Haven't done that yet. Shout out to the Sack Chat. And Scooter 916 was saying, this conversation when we were talking about really just hot seats and the idea of wanting to get better, he said, this conversation doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy. Is Mike Brown on the hot seat? I would say no. I would say that's a completely different situation because Giannis basically is the mayor of of that city or of that town, and he wanted him gone. That's why I call him Giannis LeBron Antetokounmpo. That's what's going on here. So unless somebody on that team, unless we feel like, and to how Brendan put it, lost the locker room, Mike Brown, which I truly don't think he has, completely different situation, so I don't think you got to worry about that.
No.
There are some things going on, though, and Jason Anderson put out an article 2 days ago, and it's, like I said, he did it in the dead of the night. The only reason I saw it was because I was up with baby girl, And now it's starting to get some legs, and we have some Sam Amick sound that we will play a little bit later in the show where he discusses it. We know that when it comes to fans and media and players, fans are always going to side, most of the time, on the side of the players. I get that. But, Brendan, we haven't really got to discuss since the article came out just your take on where we're at with this. Is it overblown? And by the way, just maybe just walking back some of the Kings fans that we've seen on social media, on Reddit, worried about De'Aaron Fox and like the organization. I don't want to misspeak here, but I would like to let them know that I don't think it's that deep.
Yeah.
It ain't that deep.
Right.
Right. We can't really go into the details too much, but from what we know, it ain't that deep.
Right. I don't think it's that deep. I think it's, it seems to me that it's De'Aaron upset that after that New Orleans game where they got blown out by 50, and this all stems from the media side, and I think that they attempt, and I attempt to kind of try to speak for the fan base a little bit sometimes in those media sessions, is after they got blown out in Boston by who knows how much, Keon Ellis gets sent to the podium.
Yep.
And it's like, all right, that's not really fair. But I guess he was a backup point guard at the time. Like, it's not the worst thing.
It's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad, but it's real bad when it happens again.
We've seen it before, though.
Yes, for sure.
Which is also
it is bad for sure, but it's, you know, kind of reaches another point when it happens again, when you get blown out at home against New Orleans.
When you're about to go on a long road trip as well.
Mm-hmm. And you're down like 40-50, getting 50. Totally beat by this team.
Yeah, 50.
That you'd already lost to three times. Mm-hmm. And Keon Ellis didn't play in this game until they were down 40, I think, at this point in the fourth quarter, and he only plays, I got to come up with a better term, but garbage time minutes, and then goes to the podium. And so Mike Brown kind of got asked about, you know, well, I'll just start by saying that's not fair to Keon. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. I think there's about seven dudes on that team that could have talked. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the typical starting five, and there's Trey Lyles and Malik Monk. Yeah. Those guys play every single night that they're available, really. And I think it would have, it's not just a De'Aaron thing. It could have been any of those other guys. Mm-hmm. But De'Aaron got some crap for it after the fact for not showing up. And his frustration is that he didn't even get asked to do media that day. Mm-hmm. And so from his perspective, I'd imagine, it's like a, why is everybody mad at me? I didn't even get asked to do this.
Yeah.
And now everybody's on me about it. And I think that it's just kind of, I guess, snowballed from there. And, you know, not going to speak to like where he's at mentally or anything right now, but that seemed to sort of be the peak of it, or what kind of started this not really preferring to speak to media. And that's where we're currently at, really. And we get one more practice today that I'm going to head to at noon, and we'll see. And then they're going to be gone on the longest road trip of the season.
So my question to that, and I don't think that there is an answer, but I think what you're saying is, I think, really, really great stuff. But do we have an answer to why De'Aaron chose to sit out those 16 press conferences or whatever, 16 days that it was?
Not really. My understanding is just that there was a frustration that stemmed from, again, that New Orleans game where if he did not get asked, which is my understanding, that is unfair to him, that like, why is everybody on me? I didn't even get asked to do this.
Yeah.
And I think after even the Boston game, or it was some game previously in the year, I could be remembering specifically which one, he got asked like why he didn't do media. And he's like, well, I never turned it down. I just didn't get asked, you know? So I think there's kind of a frustration there, but that's really the extent of kind of what I got on that. And maybe that's building up, like maybe there's behind the scenes stuff going on with him in his personal life. I'm not saying that there is, and I know about it. I'm not saying it. I genuinely have no clue, but like, I feel like it's important to acknowledge each person is human. And I feel like it's easy for people to kind of forget that, and you never know what somebody's going through, but this is a contractual obligation. So I get why this has become a big thing. You're losing four in a row, which I think got blown out of proportion a little bit, but I get it from a fan base perspective. And at that point, the fan base wants to hear from their franchise cornerstone. So I get the frustration from the fan base's side, but that's my understanding. I couldn't really tell you why it's extended as long as it has, but that's my understanding of like when it started.
Because it's just a little bit confusing that if you I understand. I completely understand why De'Aaron would be upset for people being upset at something that he, in that moment, had no say over. But if you're upset about feeling as if something is being miscommunicated or you're being misunderstood, in my opinion, the best way of getting a more clear understanding is by coming out and saying it yourself. And so I think that's where I think De'Aaron loses a little bit of his legs to stand on there when it's, okay, yes, I'm upset about whatever the specific situation is. Well, if you're upset, like, I mean, he definitely let us know with that interview that he had breaking the 16-day streak, that that pregame press conference showed all the frustration that he's feeling, but say something about it. I mean, to me, again, if you're really frustrated, this no one likes anybody being passive-aggressive, and it seems to me that's the approach that he's taken, and I understand why he would be upset, but I don't think that he's gone about it the right way.
Yeah, I definitely get that. There was like 5 years where the team sucked, and he was
absolutely
talking to the kids
every
all
time.
The time.
Every time.
And he'd be really annoyed after losses.
He sure
and
would.
I always use him as, honestly, like a comparison of like one of my realizations of how normal these dudes are. Like there's days he clearly does not want to speak with us.
Right.
And I think that's totally fine and normal human behavior. There's days I don't want to do certain things at my job. Sorry, Joe. You guys are great.
But isn't that why you get an allotted, right? Well, let me ask this. What I've heard, I don't know if it's necessarily completely true or not, is that he was up against it as far as the NBA was concerned. So him talking to the media in that pregame, was it actually De'Aaron saying, I'm breaking this? Or was it saying, I don't want to get fined?
Yes.
I think it was probably more of the latter, but that's just kind of guessing, and I don't really know. Because he is, I'm not trying to like defend him. I'm just kind of trying to present the other side of like, you know, if he wants to eat a fine and not talk, he technically could do that.
Definitely can.
I think that some people can kind of think that, and again, this is just me trying to think of presenting the other side, not saying that I believe this or anything, is that, like, I think some people could be like, well, why do I need to justify myself to you guys?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I don't know, but, like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of up to him. And if he wants to eat the fine, if it got to that point, and I'd imagine that talking pregame kind of reset that timer.
Yes.
Big Marshawn Lynch, I'm just here so I don't get fined vibes.
Yes, right. Very much so.
Which is hilarious to me. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if it doesn't help that it's also coming at a time where he's not playing well.
Right.
And people want to hear about that.
Team's not playing well.
And, yeah, and this is his contractual obligation. Like, I think that for the sake of the fan base, he should be out there. He should be talking. This is part of your contract. And I'd imagine that eventually this will all blow over, but I think there's just a level of frustration, and he could go out there and give us super short backhanded comments because he's done that before, and that's fine. Yeah. And
that is always my thing. All right, we got to get to a break. When we get back, we do have sound from Sam Amick. We're going to keep this conversation going. And again, there is no, the beef is not as deep as you think. To all the Kings fans, the Beam regime, everybody out there listening, at least as far as we know, right? At least as far as we know, the beef with De'Aaron and this whole situation, I just saw some crazy stuff floating around. Some account said De'Aaron has unfollowed the Sacramento Kings on Instagram. And someone said, homie, he was never following the Kings, or that was 4 years ago. So we're trying to just give everybody clarity, as much clarity as we can. Keep listening. We will be right back. Styles and Watkins joined by Brandon Nunes, our Sacktown Sports Insider. We'll be right back.